Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, February the 8th. And we'll start the day by letting you know, yes, it's cold out there. We are going to have a high of 17 degrees and a low down to 4. So just bundle up and think that in about 6 weeks, it's going to be spring, and so we'll think those happy thoughts. And also know that another good thing, here on the Pothole Patrol, we have on the front page a picture of a gentleman totally bundled up, and he has got his gloves on, working hard. It's early morning rain on Thursday doesn't stop Mario Davis, a Bloomington Public Works employee, from applying pavement patching material to fix potholes on Old Farm Road. And Mr. Davis has got gloves, a nice bright yellow jacket, and he's got his Illini shirt on, or sweatshirt, and wishing him well working outdoors in this nasty rain yesterday, and today it's very cold. It says winter takes a toll on roads. Here's more of that story. It's the time of year when potholes seem to be everywhere. But if you think you're dodging more this year, you're not imagining it. The recent 70 degree swing in temperatures over several days has compounded the pothole problem that typically is at its worst about this time of year. We're seeing more than we normally expect to see this time of year when all of the snow from all of the storms starts to melt, said Bloomington Public Works Director Jim Karsh. Unfortunately, there are potholes in every area of the city that need to be addressed, said Karsh. It's worse because of the major swings in temperatures. He was referring to the polar vortex on January 30 that dropped the temperature to minus 21 degrees and spawned wind chill factors in the range of minus 40 to minus 50 degrees. That was followed by several days when temperatures climbed to 40s and 50s. Those major swings in temperatures caused the water within the pavement to freeze and thaw, said Karsh. When water freezes, it causes a 9% expansion, which can break the pavement and cause more areas for the water to get into and for those pavements to fail under heavy traffic conditions. Karsh said the city budgets for overtime pay annually for pothole operations. We're putting every resource that we can towards the potholes to try to get them to taken care of, including dedicating all non-emergency street and sewer employees to assist with pothole repairs. Public Works crews worked overtime Saturday and this week trying to keep up with the potholes on Thursday. We are trying to make our way through the city as quickly as we can. We have used 62 tons of cold mix, that's the patching material, to date, and have six crews out on potholes now. We are doing overtime to keep up, Karsh added. Normal also is working hard to make sure potholes are filled with cold patch as soon as possible, both by looking for problem areas and responding to public complaints, said Public Works Director Wayne Aldridge. Typically, after the snow clears, we get some thawing weather and it gets wet and pothole requests come in. We'll receive as many as 10 of those per day, he said. In the meantime, we're doing patrols with as many as 5 crews. If our guys aren't responding to a snow event or there's a small crew replacing mailboxes, typically we're going to be on potholes. Bloomington crews also are tracking where the potholes are occurring to see if other issues with those areas need to be addressed. Some potholes are sometimes a symptom of a larger pavement condition. When you see potholes, those typically occur as streets start to reach a need for additional maintenance, including resurfacing or pavement preservation, said Karsh. The most efficient way to report potholes in Bloomington is for residents to use the My Bloomington app on their cell phone or other smart devices, said Karsh. Via the app, you can actually take pictures and geolocate the pothole, and the city crews will get to it just as quick as we can, said Karsh. Most times of the year, we're able to take care of the potholes reported within 24 hours. Residents can download the app for free on the Apple or Android app stores, he added. Aldrich encouraged town residents to report potholes on Normal's website. Reports can be filed by hovering over the I Want To menu and then looking under Report to choose potholes, or at normal.org/form-center/public-works-11/public-works-concerns-questions-103. Sometimes folks may want to call or email me or someone specific, but there's a distribution list this goes to, said Aldrich of the tool. You may want to report several on a specific street. That's fine, but be as specific as you can. We'll respond and add it to a work list. Aldrich said he's not sure this year is unusual for the number or size of potholes in Normal, but he encouraged drivers to stay vigilant anywhere, at least until the city can switch from cold patch to a more durable hot asphalt mix to fill the holes during warm spring weather. And then we're going to talk about Mr. Beeman's lawsuit revived. And this offers an opportunity for you to go on the web to read about the decision on www.pantograph.com. But here is what the article presents. It says, High Court reverses dismissal of claims against former officers. The Illinois Supreme Court has reversed an appellate ruling that denied Alan Beeman the right to a trial on his claims against the town and three former Normal police officers involved in an investigation that led to murder charges against him. The ruling issued Thursday sends Beeman's case back to the 4th District Appellate Court in Springfield for more consideration of Beeman's claims against former investigators Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, Frank Zays, now all retired. Beeman was convicted of murder in 1993, strangulation death of his former girlfriend Jennifer Locke Miller, a 21-year-old Illinois State University student. The Illinois Supreme Court reversed Beeman's conviction in 2008 after he had served about 13 years of a 50-year sentence. The state later dismissed the murder charge against Beeman. In 2013, the state issued a certificate of innocence to Beeman, and in 2015, then-Governor Pat Quinn pardoned Beeman based upon innocence as if no conviction. David Shapiro, one of Beeman's lawyers, said Thursday, this important precedent is Allman's second unanimous victory in the Supreme Court. He will continue his lifelong fight for justice and accountability. It's an honor to represent him. In the decision that revives Beeman's lawsuit, the Supreme Court advised the appellate court to review whether the detective's direct involvement in the case was a proximate cause of criminal charges. being filed against Beeman. Attorneys for the town and the officers contend the decision to file charges against Beeman was made by prosecutors and not the officers. Shapiro argued to the Supreme Court in September that the lower court erred when it dismissed Beeman's lawsuit alleging misconduct by three officers. The appellate court concurred with the lower court decision. Beeman's lawyers contend Friesmeier lied to a grand jury considering indictments against Beeman by withholding information of a second suspect, a man who had dated Locke Miller and had a history of drug use and domestic violence. The alleged improper influence by the normal investigators on the former prosecutors led to the malicious prosecution of Beeman, his lawyers suggested. Federal court actions filed by Beeman against the officers, the town, and former state's attorney Charles Raynard and former prosecutor Jim Sook, who both went on to serve as circuit judges, were unsuccessful. Sook and Raynard were dropped from the lawsuit based on immunity, and claims against other defendants also were dismissed. In 2014, Beeman filed a lawsuit in state court against three former officers and the town alleging malicious prosecution, emotional distress, and civil conspiracy. Beeman resides in Rockford with his wife and two daughters. And then we have a picture of him walking center. He walks out of the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana with his parents, Carol and Barry Beeman, in 2013 after winning a certificate of innocence in the murder of Jennifer Locke Miller, his former girlfriend, who was slain in 1993 in an apartment in Normal. Our final front page article is regarding owners' rising wages costly. And many of you have heard of the negotiations going on about small businesses and ISU citing concerns about the cost of wages going up. So this is a report from Kelsey Watznauer. It says, after the Illinois Senate passed legislation Thursday to raise the state minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2025, university officials and small business owners said the raise could cost them a lot of money. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz said Thursday that increasing the minimum wage from $8.25 to $9.25 an hour, which would be the first phase increase in the legislation, would cost us about $600,000. The cost would be $7.5 million once the concept was fully implemented, he said, referring to the $15 rate that would take effect in 2025. Senate Bill 1 was approved 39-18 and will be sent to the House for consideration. If the bill passes in the House, Illinois' minimum wage would increase from its current $8.25 per hour, where it has sat since 2010, to $9.25 on January 1st next year, 2020. After a 75-cent bump to $10 on July 1, 2020, the wage would increase a dollar each January until 2025. My hope is that if elected officials think it's a good idea, they would fund it by providing more money to public universities, Dietz said. Otherwise, it would be an unfunded mandate. If the state does not increase money To higher education, to adjust for the higher minimum wages, the university would have to increase tuition to make up for the with the number or reduced number of student employees, Dietz said. It would probably be a combination of both, he added. There were 4,000 to 5,000 students who work at the U of I, ISU. A student senate, state senate, in a statement, state senator Jason Berrickman, Republican of Bloomington, said the cost of the increase would be more than $1 billion for direct state employees. Universities would face tons of millions in new costs with the potential for thousands of student employee layoffs, he said. According to several schools, the hike will likely result in layoffs for teachers. For teacher aides and other positions that will negatively affect in the classroom and or create pressure to raise property taxes. Berrickman voted against the bill, which was split by party with no Republicans voting in favor and no Democrats voting against. This isn't about whether or not the minimum wage should be increased. It's about how much, how fast, and what we can do to minimize the loss of jobs, he said. Unfortunately, this regulation doesn't really do much of anything. On any of those fronts. McLean County Chamber of Commerce recently conducted members' testimonial surveys to determine the impact of the proposed legislation and received more than 400 responses, said John Walsh, Government and Public Affairs Manager for the Chamber. He says, of those responses, 91% said they are concerned with the increase and believe it will negatively impact their day-to-day operations, Walsh said Thursday. Several small business owners responded that they might have to reduce to offset costs, slow hiring new employees, or lay off current employees. About 14% of the chamber's survey respondents believe the wages may increase would be detrimental to their business, Walsh said. If the bill becomes law, that will definitely impact us, said Scout Nord, who bought Kelly's Bakery and Cafe at 113 North Center Street in downtown Bloomington last summer. I only employ four people, and I definitely don't pay them all $15 right now, Nord said. If I have to pay everyone $15, I probably have to have a smaller staff and raise prices on the stuff again, which I just did when I took over in July. Chris Coos, owner of the Vitsis Cycle Shop and often running in Normal, said he sees a couple of pitfalls in raising the minimum wage for for a business like this, which has five full-time employees and about 20 seasonal part-time employees. I think the timeline over 7 years might be easier for my business, he said. The other issue that I've got to think about is when I bring in new kids, part-time high school kids or freshmen in college, they don't have any experience, and it takes time and money to train them up. Coos noted, however, that in his shop which he shares at the zoo's Let me repeat this for you. The other issue that Mr. Cruz has is that I got to thinking about this when he brings on new hires part-time, such as high school students or freshmen in college who do not have any experience. It takes time and money to train them up. Mr. Cruz noted, however, in his shops, which share space at 206 South Linden Street, he doesn't pay any employee minimum wage, and he's not concerned about a new floor elevating others' wages. It's a competitive environment, and to get good people, you have to pay higher than that. The people who have been with me for a few years, I'm now paying close to $15 an hour, he said. I'm in an industry where people have to have experience and knowledge. Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason said he kept his eyes on this bill and the positives and negatives that could arise out of it, pass it as it passes in both chambers. Like many of the small businesses, we know that has impact in the city, but I don't want to be closed by the possible positives that might come out of this. How people have more to spend on different products, he said. We'll just have to wait and see. And if you'd like more information, you can contact Kelsey Watsonar at 309-820-3254. Or tweet her at KWATZNAUER, period. And thank you for listening to that. Okay, and now let's go through how time flies. Did you realize that 100 years ago it was 1919? And on February 8th of 1919, local businessmen were organizing a new financial institution in Bloomington. It was called Liberty State Bank, and it will have a capitalization of $100,000 and will open in temporary quarters on West Jefferson Street, across from the Illinois Hotel. Much of the stock is already sold. And 75 years ago, on February 8th of 1944, a B-26 Army bomber made an emergency landing at the Bloomington Airport early that morning. Low on fuel and lost, the crew landed there because of the runway lights were on. Their compass readings were off by as much as 40 degrees, it was determined. Now, 50 years ago was 1969, and on February 8th of 1969, John E. Martin of Johnny Martin Chevrolet bought new tires for 5 police cars. It was a public service gesture by Martin, who is also selling the city's new squad cars. The old tires were bald, resulting in department-wide no chase order that was a sore spot with cops. And 25 years ago, which was on 1944, the Colfax Village Board hired Michael Walters of Metamora as the new police chief. He'll move to Colfax soon, and he'll make $21,000 on his job as 2 part-time officers in addition to Walters, and they have been fixing and cleaning squad cars. Now, you might also want to note this from a little bit earlier when we talked about potholes. And we mentioned that in Bloomington, you had a number that you could call. It says Bloomington can potholes can be reported using My Bloomington app and by calling the hotline 309 434 bump or 2867, or by emailing the public works at cityblm.org. And then, of course, there's the normal pothole registration, in which you go to the city's website at normal.org and follow the links to public works concerns and questions. And then if you have one that you find along a state road, motorists can report potholes on state highways online or by calling 1-800-452-IDOT, or that's 1-800-452-4368. And now let's look at something we need to think about, and that is Flick's fact. Flick's got a good one today. Let's see what it read it out here. Okay. It says, can you name the mile-wide area of Bloomington that has produced a U.S. presidential candidate, three Illinois governors, a U.S. vice president, and a U.S. Supreme Court justice, a United Nations ambassador, three Illinois state senators, and the man who invented the microwave popcorn bag? Oh my goodness, that's quite a spot to be from. And it's in this area. And the answer is, it's the area in Bloomington, roughly from Country Club Place, west to the David Davis Mansion, and then on to Franklin Park. So who knew? That's pretty exciting. And then we also want to mention a couple of road closings since, again, we talked about potholes earlier. It says Regency Drive, Bloomington. The northbound lane of Regency Drive from Rust Road to Washington Street is closed to all traffic due to water main repairs. Regency Drive will be reopened as soon as work is done. And next we have West Market Street, Bloomington. And that West Market Street from Henshaw to Livingston is closed to all traffic for an emergency water main repair. The West Market will reopen as soon as the work is done. Okay. So now you know about road closures, you know about pothole repairs, and hope you have enjoyed this first half hour. We've got a little more time we could add here. Up, oh, here's your lucky pick threes. You ready? Pick three midday was 691, fireball was 7. And one more, the Mega Million jackpot is up to 157 million. So if you like to play Lucky Day Lotto Evening, the numbers were 2, 7, 14, 42, and 43. And this has been Pat Nancy Pippen with the Pantograph for Friday, the February the 8th, 2019. And hope to see you in our next. We'll take a quick break and hope to see you in our hear from you in your next half hour. Goodbye.